2020 meeting of the Chelan County Public Utility District Commission. I'd like to thank everyone for being with us this morning, and in consideration of COVID-19, today's meeting will be conducted virtually. Members of the public are encouraged to make comments and ask questions during our business session. If you do wish to speak, please state your name and address for the record and limit your comments to 3 minutes. The business session will take place this afternoon. This morning's meeting is a study session. Four commissioners are attending today. Commissioner McKenna is excused. General Manager Steve Wright, General Counsel Eric Walquist, and Rebecca Garfing, Clerk of the Board, are also in attendance. So if you would please join me for the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States,
States of America.
And to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, liberty, and justice for all. Thank you, everyone. So we have an approval of an agenda this morning. Commissioners, any item can be moved to consent. Do I hear any such request?
Commissioner Arsenault, could I just, we jumped over our safety minute and would like to go back to Jenny Conrad if we could.
Oh, all right. I had it in reverse order, but thank you very much. Let's do that.
Steve, she was looking so relieved.
Okay, well, thanks for having me. So I wanted to just talk a little bit about how I watched HPI help change a culture. It was at my previous employment, and it was an incident that occurred, and it was one that a lot of people would have said was unlikely. It was not expected. It was one of those scenarios that everybody was just like, how did this happen? Without going into too much detail into the incident, because I really want to focus on what happened following the incident, we had three contractors that were working outside. It was in a fresh air area. They were working on a unit that was being brought down at an exhaust fan just before the scrubbers. The work that they were doing was simple. Like I said, they were outside, open air. Our own folks work in the area all the time, had never had a problem. When the unit came down, the gases actually settled because it was heavier than air. And the crew that was working around the fan, they were directly where those gases settled. And three contractors ended up going to the hospital that day for exposure to CO2. They all ended up okay, but it was a really close call. And it was something that could have had a much worse result. But following that, you know, obviously we started our event learning session. We started having discussions. We came up with solutions, methods, ways to move forward to prevent, you know, any kind of extra problems. And I say we, I mean safety, leadership from the plant, our executive leaders. We were all going through a step-by-step through the event, what we had learned. The meeting broke for lunch. And during that time, a frontline supervisor came up to me and approached me and had concerns because some of our folks were needed to prep the area to allow the contractors to potentially go back into work. And of course, they had concerns, wanted to know how would they do it, how would they do it safely. I described two of the different methods that we had come up with on how you can go in there safely and how you can protect them. And ultimately, the supervisor was content and happy with the solutions we gave him, and he left. But then after he left, a member of the management team approached me, having overheard the conversation. And to my disappointment, the statement that he made was, you know, we've done this work for 30 years with no incident. And now all of a sudden, one thing happens and you want to change everything that we do. And I spent the next short while having a discussion with him, trying to get him to understand the value and, you know, the fact that we caught this and learning from mistakes. And before he had really, you know, bought into it, we had to go back into our meeting with everybody. So we were back in the meeting with all the leadership. And in the afternoon, it was our senior VP who made a statement. And the statement was, I think this is amazing. Here's a task we never saw a risk in. Here's a task we've been doing for 30 years, and we never saw a hazard, and we have an opportunity to make a change. You know, we can learn from this. We can make changes at every single plant and make sure that it never happens again. And this is an opportunity for us to make sure that we're protecting people, and I'm grateful we have the opportunity without it costing someone's life. And so the senior VP made that statement, and I looked over and I was watching the manager that had approached me previously, and you could see the dawning in his eyes, right? The recognition that, yeah, that he was, you know, that this is correct, that HPI is the right way to learn. It's not so easy for other groups, you know, from frontline or leadership to always say that safety and HPI are going to work. You know, we never come up with hardcore data that proves that we saved lives. We can't prove that we protected people. We can't prove that nobody got hurt because of a change that was made. You know, we put these things in place to prevent an incident, but you can't prove that it actually did it. So safety's always got an uphill battle. So that being said, you know, I think and I believe that we made a difference that day, right? And after hearing senior leadership buy into the HPI, a number of our other individuals, you know, jumped on board. And that helped make the HPI culture change. That was one of the big shifts. It helped everyone have a questioning attitude. And I think there's a huge value in HPI, and it must be seen at every level of the company and every level to be recognized. So a lesson that I took from that day is that it takes all of us, you know, but change can happen, and change can be good. And people don't like change, but change can be good. And just because we've done something, you know, one way for 30 years doesn't mean we can't make it better or safer for the future. So that's it. If you have any questions.
That's really good, Jenny. That's a good presentation. And, you know, you're right. We do things in a certain manner for many years, and perhaps we're just lucky that something doesn't happen bad as a result of the procedure. And so examining how we do a procedure makes a great deal of sense, and certainly improving it if we can. And it's also natural to be a little bit of pushback, but good job. I mean, that's wonderful.
So, Jenny, that maybe was one of the more powerful safety moments that I've ever witnessed. And it probably hit me immediately when you talked about the CO2 exposure, knowing that people have died in the fruit industry from CO2 exposure. So it was very, very real. So thank you so much.
Nice job, Jenny. Appreciate it very much.
Great. If there's any questions, otherwise I'll bounce out.
Thank you, Jenny.
Thank you.
All right, Jenny, thank you. Very nice. So now we should move on to the approval of the agenda. The commissioners, any item on the consent agenda is subject to transfer. Do I hear any such request?
Commissioner Arsenault, based on management recommendation, I'd like to suggest that we move resolutions, I believe it's 12 through 19, to the consent agenda.
Commissioner Smith, I'd make one amendment to that. It'd be 12 through 18. I think that might be that I made a mistake in my the information I gave you, but number 19 is the one relating to the hotspots, and I think it would be worth just a little bit of more discussion around that.
I think I might have not jotted it down correctly. So 12 through 18.
Joy, thank you, Commissioner Smith. Do I have a second?
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Do we have any discussion? Hearing no discussion, all those in favor of moving items 12 through 18 to consent, please say aye.
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 Those opposed, say nay. And the ayes have it. Thank you. Steve, at this time, I'd like to move on to our CPO winner.
Yes, and I would like to do that too. So we're really happy to welcome Nate Hill to here today. He was going to be at a board meeting earlier, wasn't able to make it, but we're really glad he was able to join us. He's done some really terrific work. He was recognized by a colleague who called him out for work he had done on C2M, which is we're working on our new billing system and trying to figure out how to make a lot of different things work. I think the key here was that he took personal accountability to solve an internal customer's problem. You know, he identified the issue and then really said, well, how best can we solve that problem? And I think that's what stood out to us. And that's what we're always looking for is, you know, think about customers, whether they're external customers or internal customers. We're always trying to create high customer satisfaction. Nate brought that culture to the problem and really took personal accountability to solve it. So, Nate, would love it if you would take a moment to just describe some of the work that you've done and share with the board a little bit your experience.
Sure. Is my audio coming through okay?
You sound great.
Okay, great. Thank you very much, and thank you for the opportunity to speak to you today. I just wanted to thank Maria and the finance department for generously recognizing me, and I also just wanted to acknowledge that I know that a lot of people are working really hard right now with the COVID response, and so in some ways it doesn't necessarily seem to merit an award with everything going on, but I'm definitely happy to be recognized. As you guys are, or as everyone's aware, we had a big project with C2M over the last year, and we've also done a lot of work. We've switched over our banks over the last couple of years, and so both of those things really have affected Maria, and she's a very diligent and does a lot of work to organize a lot of data for our banking and cash management, treasury things. So, I was amidst all these changes, I had an opportunity just to sit down with her, and I think echoing kind of what Jenny was saying earlier, in terms of just really taking a hard look at, are we doing the processes the right way? Can we do this better? And so I like to do that. And so it was just an opportunity to sit down with her, really go step by step and say, are we doing the right things and trying to find opportunities to improve it? And so those are the most interesting things for me to work on. So I was happy that I could help her and may not save any lives, but hopefully it's saving some time in the end. So.
Great. Thank you, Nate.
You're welcome.
Nate, I'll tell you what, when you have the ability to sort of step outside your daily routine and look at possibilities, that's a real skill set. It really is. And so I want to thank you very much for putting that skill set to work for the benefit of the district and the support of your coworkers. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, commissioners, I think we are ready to move on to our next item. Nate, congratulations. And again, thank you for your participation today as well.
Okay. Thank you all very much. Have a great day.
Thank you. You too.
Next up, we have presentation, as we do on an annual basis, to review the upcoming legislative session. Sean Seaman and Tracy Out will be making this presentation.
Thank you, commissioners. This is Sean. Good to all see you. Even though it's a tiny little version of you all, it's good to see you all today. So go ahead, next slide, please. So just a quick overview of the session. It is a long one. This is the 105-day session, the first session of the biennium. Begins the 11th. It's a budget year, so it's a significant year, especially this year coming up. So they'll be working on operating capital and transportation budgets this year. Of course, there's no mystery that some of the drivers are going to be just how's the state going to respond to COVID? The budget issues have been pretty dramatic. But also out there is, as you recall, the covert replacement issue. This went all the way to the Supreme Court, whereas the state lost. And now they are actually beginning the culvert replacement projects. This is all on the west side. It's west of the Cascade. But they have about 134 projects, I think, coming up this next year. And then the next biennium, another 150 plus or more. So there's a significant number of culvert replacements that they're going to need to fund. You've heard, I think you've all heard some of the revenue projections for the state in the 2019-21 period and the 21-23 period. And Senator Hawkins spoke about this at the Tri-Commission meeting, but I think it's worth repeating here that the current operating budget shortfall now is about $2.3 billion, but that's down from $4.5 billion in June. So we're trending in the positive direction. The budget reductions are going down, but we still have a significant shortfall. So the total shortfall through 2023, so the next biennium beyond this, is about $4.2 billion. But again, that's half the $8.8 billion that was projected for that same four-year period just about 6 months ago. So very positive that we're moving to budget gaps, although significant, are reducing. So including in that is that it looks like the revenues are expected to grow about 8.6% between the 2017 and 2019 and 2019-21 biennium. So, and then growing to 7.4% for the next 4 years as well. So we're seeing revenues increasing, which is positive. As far as another part of the overview, we're still waiting on the House committee structures. We did get some information since this presentation was drafted on the Senate committee structures and their assignments. The only significant change there was that, I think I'll talk about this a little bit, Senator Taco did not get reelected, and we have a change there, and I'll talk about that in a little bit. We have not seen the Republican committee assignments, nor have we seen anything out of the House as yet. One thing that I'm very happy to report on is that there should be fewer bills. Both leadership of the House and Senate are asking for fewer bills to come out of committee. As you recall, we can easily have 2,000 to 3,000 bills per year. And the ask now is to reduce those. There's been some direction towards what those bills should look like. Again, finally, it's a virtual session. Nobody's allowed in the Capitol other than some staff and the legislators. But we'll be able to testify remotely, which is something that is going to be good for all those who live across the state. And it actually could end up being a change in the future. We'll see what changes stick with the legislature going forward. Next slide, please.
Sean, can I ask a question?
Yes, please, Commissioner.
In terms of the meetings being virtual, have they designated how long they expect those meetings to remain virtual?
Throughout the session, the whole session will be that way. Is your question in the session or beyond the session?
Well, even beyond the session, I'm trying to get a sense for what their view is to COVID and virtual meetings, and as it applies certainly to what we do here in Chelan.
So I have not heard of anything beyond the session, but as I was stating, Commissioner, I'm hopeful that they could see some benefit of having remote testimony. Right now, you can do remote testimony from Spokane or the Tri-Cities to accommodate some people, but having something broader would be beneficial. So we'll see how this goes. I think it's a bit of an experiment for the legislature, and they may decide that they see some value in that. And so maybe it's up to us as constituents if we like it to be able to voice that as well.
Thank you.
Another question on what you just covered, Sean?
Yes, Commissioner.
Back to the budget shortfall. And I know it's sort of like a yo-yo, and we went from 4.8 to 2.4, but with the current status of what's going on with COVID, is there a concern that we could see another dip in the projected receipts from the budget, let's say in February or March, when the revenue forecast comes in?
It's always possible, Commissioner, and unfortunately, we're working off a September revenue projection, and the next one, I believe, is in January. So we won't know until we see that next official revenue projection.
So it would make me nervous.
I think it's making many legislators nervous. Unfortunately, they have till April to make a decision on the budget this year. So one thing I did to skip over, but on the budget, the capital budget, which we're also talking about, apparently it seems relatively unscathed just because it's a different source. It's based on bonding. And there seems to be no concern about the ability to meet the revenue budgets or the capital budgets, which is good news for us because a couple of our asks we'll be talking about are going to be funded through the capital budget. So that's positive for us. Any other questions before I move on? Very good. So what happened last November? It's no surprise, but I think some interesting information that there was significant turnout. These are Washington numbers. So nearing 85%, I think the numbers show that they were pretty close to that. You can see comparison to previous election cycles. Chelan County had 86.5% turnout. And we did note earlier that some of the chambers did have some significant changes. Some incumbents were ousted. A couple districts flipped. But overall, we saw almost no change to the balance in the chambers, as we'll talk about here in the next slide. Next slide, please. So the committee leadership, not elected, Representative Zach Hudgens, he was the chair of the innovation technology. This is where the broadband and telecom issues have oversight. So he was significant change to that. We have not seen who has now been selected as the committee chair for that committee. Representative Blake and Senator Tacko, both from out of Longview area, both were not reelected. We had quite a bit of interaction with Senator Tacko on the Senate local government, so it'd be sorry to see him leave. He's been replaced by Senator Cutterer, and she's out of Bellevue, and so that's not a PUD district, so we'll have some different challenges there, how we interact with that committee going forward. Next slide, please. So we talked about majorities, and you can see overall the 2018, these are election year numbers, not actual legislative years, but you can just see the change was pretty minimal overall. Even though with many districts, a couple districts flipping overall, you can see the balance has pretty much remained the same. Any questions on this details? I'm happy to get back to you later if you want to know more about who was elected and not reelected. Next slide, please. So for us, the top 2021 priorities, we talked about Dryden wastewater. Now, that's a cap, and this is a funding to help with the Dryden wastewater improvement project. We do well be permitting or submitting a capital fund request from Representative Steele. The House has changed their process, and we have not fulfilled that request yet because they haven't provided the new electronic form. It used to be a paper form. They're moving electronics. We're still waiting that. I have weekly emails with Representative Steele's office to remind them of our desire. We're also seeking, and through Ron Slabaugh and Ingrid has submitted a request for a grant through the Department of Ecology, the Centennial Water Fund, which we've used for the Peshastin project. And what our role will also be is to support both these funding requests through the legislative process. The Clean Energy Fund is administered through Department of Commerce. Again, we're going to support program funding, and we have some requests with that project or program coming forward. So we're going to want to ensure that those programs, the Clean Energy Fund, would be able to accommodate the type of requests we may have and will have going forward next session, next year. Next slide, please. The energy issues. We obviously, last couple sessions have been very busy, and we see this session, again, is likely to be extremely busy. There is a cap-and-trade. Right now, it's a cap-and-trade low-carbon fuel standard omnibus bill that's being drafted. It's been drafted by Representative Fitzgibbon. But we're also hearing discussion that it could be a carbon tax. We talked about earlier the transportation budget, and they see the funding of that budget is likely could come through some type of carbon pricing mechanism. A lot of detail in these are very complicated. The cap and trade bill, extremely complicated. The low carbon fuel standard bill is the same bill that we've talked about in previous years. I think it had very little changes to it. And it's likely that you can see both, even though Representative Fitzgibbon is suggesting a combined cap and trade and low carbon fuel bill, it's highly likely that those will be pulled apart. Senator Carlisle has also had a cap and trade bill in the past. So I think to find harmony, they'll find a way to align those bills going forward. Next slide, please. On the telecom issues, I think you're aware, and you're all aware, commissioners, that there has been an effort potentially for PUDs to seek retail authority. Representative Hansen has put a draft bill out to do that. But we'll see how it goes forward now that Representative Hudgens wasn't reelected. And so we'll see a new chair of the Telecom Committee in the House. And Senator Carlisle will still have jurisdiction in the Energy and Technology Committee in the Senate. A couple other things related to telecommunications is that the Public Works Board and the CURB, which is the Community Economic Revitalization Board, both are seeking more funding for their grants and loan programs to expand broadband throughout the state. In addition, the broadband office, this is Russ Elliott's office, it's housed in Commerce, is looking to more funding to increase their capabilities. And we talked briefly already about the Retail Telecom Authority for the PUDs that we know of, the bill, the draft bill by Representative Hansen. Along with the Retail Authority Bill, though, has become conditions by the telecommunication providers in the state and their associations that if PUDs were to get authority, they would have certain conditions that they would require before they could support or at least be neutral on such a bill. And a couple of those issues that came forward were pole attachments and some other issues related to transparency and how PUDs budget for their telecom systems. So there were some obvious non-starters for us with some of those conditions, but some other things we might be able to work with. Lastly, we for those who attended the PUD conference this last couple of days, digital equity and Representative Gregerson spoke about that. And the whole idea there is how do we bridge that inequities that we see with our broadband systems, not only where they are, but who is actually able to afford that and receive those broadband capabilities to help with education, telemedicine, commerce, et cetera. So digital equity will also be part of this legislative process. And we'll have more on that when we see what a draft bill. Next slide, please. So the other issues that came forward early on in the process, a dark fiber leasehold tax. Department of Revenue was trying to put together a process and a bill that would address how PUDs recover taxes or tax their dark fiber. Revenue has already admitted that they've provided less than great direction on this, and they want to try and clean it up so there's consistency amongst the PUDs how dark fiber is taxed. The Waputo priorities that you've seen that we're going to track closely is different reliefs to utilities related to their customer assistance programs due to COVID. And along with that would come some deference in some of the Clean Energy Transformation Act, CETA compliance, due to these impacts that utilities have experienced because of COVID. And also the Clean Energy Transformation Act and the Energy Independence Act alignment dates such that, again, takes some burden off the PUDs by lining these dates up to make it simpler for us to comply to both. Then finally, there was water system consolidation grants that we're going to track closely to see if there's something that we could use to look at some of these issues for us in Chelan County. And with that, I'll ask if there's any questions or if Tracy has anything he wants to add as well.
Nope, good job, Sean.
Sean, one thing that was brought up last week during the state PUD Association meetings and was articulated very well by Commissioner Public Lands Hillary Franz was how we deal with wildfire. And I know it's a little bit of a tangential issue, but the electric sector being part of the potentially part of the problem. Are we going to have any input on anything going forward as it relates to creating a wildfire fund?
I think you heard, and I'll have to see if Steve wants to jump in. He's been more in tune with some of the information, but you heard there was a discussion about Commissioner Franz's proposal previously. Whether or not we'll have input into that funding or not remains to be seen. And I don't know if there's something coming out of the wildfire work group. Steve, do you have any other, Steve or Eric, more information on that?
Yeah, a couple things. Just as you were giving this presentation, Sean, I was thinking back on the presentation that Commissioner Franz made last week as well, and realizing that we probably should add to the list of things that we'll be tracking this year will be wildfire policy. The policy that she talked about during the session at Waputa did come up in both of the last two legislative sessions. She sought this increase on the insurance payments that folks make in order to fund wildfire prevention activities. Waputa has supported that in both of the last couple of legislative sessions. We have supported it as well, and I would expect that we would continue to be involved in that. There also are some opportunities that are opened as a result of this task force that's been working that she mentioned. The task force has got some things that can just be done administratively, executive branch actions, but there are also some potentially some legislative actions. And what has happened so far is the focus has been on the administrative actions, but I would expect there'll be more conversation about potential legislative actions. So I think that's another one where there'll be an opportunity for us to be engaged.
One other thing I'd like to bring up is this is a crossover issue between state and federal. There's also some federal legislation that we will be monitoring and making sure we understand how the two, both the efforts at the federal level and the efforts that we'll be following here in the community and broader at the state, we understand how those fit together.
Very good. Well, I appreciate the opportunity. Any questions, please let me know.
Thanks, Sean.
Welcome.
Good report.
Okay, next up, we have our annual energy efficiency update. Andrew Grissell will be making this presentation. Can you see Andrew? Andrew, we're just wondering if you're there or if you're on mute. Andrew, we can see you're online. We don't think you're muted, but we can't hear you at the moment. All right, I think we're going to go to a fallback here for a moment and move up an agenda item. John Yale, you look like you're online. Would you be ready to step up while we try to fix any technical difficulties here?
Sure.
Great. Okay, so we're going to move to John's presentation on Generation Digital Transformation, an update on those activities.
Good morning, commissioners. I'm John Yale, and I'm your Hydro Plant Engineering Manager. And this morning is a update, as Steve said, on digital transformation, the things that we've been going on, the things that you've supported, is for information only. There's no action that's needed from you. So why are we here? So we're looking to use technology to do more things more efficiently and more effectively. We, in Generation and Transmission, we define digital transformation as the ability to access and utilize data to improve our business processes and drive decision-making. In other words, how can we do it better, more efficiently with the resources that we have? What we're looking for, the expected outcomes, would be to accelerate decisions, improve O&M efficiencies, and reduce forced outages. So there's really three primary efforts or areas that we focus our efforts. So one is data, getting more data and improving the value of the data, the accuracy, the fidelity, the reliability of that data. More tools, using technology to do things with that data. It's great to have data, but if you don't do anything with it, it's just taking up storage space. And our culture. If we need to know, we need to make decisions, we have to modify our culture to use and rely on that data as well. So I'm going to talk about some specific things that we've been doing. One is a stator temperature predictive model. And it's the first model we've developed to try and predict what's going on with the equipment. We've developed an anomaly detection system. Basically, how do we know when something's not quite right before it fails or goes into an alarm? We're working on a rotor-mounted data system so we can see, get data off of the rotating parts of the unit. We're looking at a fairly simple turbine runner hub sensor. Can we tell when we have water getting into the turbine so we know how to have issues? But that's a big challenge since, as you know, the runner's underwater inside concrete and spinning. And lastly, how do we acquire our data? How do we communicate it? And what analysis tools are we working on? So the stator temperature predictive model, as I said, is one of a family of models that we're working on. But the idea here is to use data and big data tools to develop a quantifiable model for how a stator operates. So as we change things, what happens? A key piece of stator operation is its temperature. We know from statistics, life, our own experience, industry experience, that temperature is a key aging function on the stator itself. So we've used big data techniques looking at our historical data, roughly 20 years of temperature models, and combine that with engineering water knowledge. As I say, big data is great, but I already know that water flows downhill. We don't need to analyze the data to find that. Similarly, I know if we put more megawatts on a stator, the temperature will go up. So how do we combine those together? The goal here is to better manage our stator temperatures, our cooling systems. Can we come up with ways to better do our maintenance and, in the end, manage our stator life? Not necessarily extend it if that doesn't make sense, but how do we manage that life? So those of you who have been out to the units, which I think everyone here has, the stator is the big stationary part where the electricity flows through. It is highly efficient, but 1% of 150 megawatts is a lot of heat. It certainly generates into the powerhouse. So the inputs into this model are the cooling water temperature. So we circulate water from the river through air coolers like radiators on cars to cool the stator. So we have the water temperature, we have the water flow. We can control the amount of flow. We have the stator current, and we have the ambient air temperature. Those all are the inputs into the model. The outputs are what is the winding temperature, and we're working on an output that says it's time to go maintain that cooler, that we're seeing it's getting plugged up and we need to do something. So this one is the interface that's actually operating out there. It's a tool that we can go to using a web browser, and we put in certain information. So here it's operating at a total phase current of 9,000 amps, which is normal rated output. And under the conditions of the water, the data that I put into it, the stator winding temperature should be about 78.5 degrees. And zero says this is my normal condition. So now my question is, well, what happens if somebody says, let's increase our stator current? Maybe we want to provide more megawatts. We can put in a new value. So let's say we increase it by 500 amps. This automatically then looks and says, well, your temperature is going to go up. You've put more energy in, and you can take out as much energy. So when I look at the temperature based on some industry data, I can say, if we run this unit at 500 higher amps, I'm going to reduce its remaining life by 7%. That gives us an understanding. So this is our goal, to be able to predict what are the impacts of decisions we make on the equipment. So the next thing here is we have modeled this using all of our data, and we know the correlations to take it from a Rocky Reach unit where we started down to a Rock Island unit and all the way up to Chelan, which are very dissimilar. But now using the data from the Hydropower Research Institute, we're going to start modeling it based on all of the core units as they get them in, some of southern units, and find out how robust is this model. And how do we do the correlations to translate it from sizes and types of units? Obviously, a water-cooled unit's going to be very different, but the majority of hydro units out there in the world are air-cooled, very similar to ours. We've applied for a patent for the modeling behind this, for the intellectual property of how we're doing that, and we're working with others. The Corps of Engineers is interested in using this model to model the impact of providing reactive power. Reactive power increases the current on the stator. As I showed, if you increase the current, it increases the temperature and shortens the life. can they use that then to put a value on providing that reactive power? And then we're going to work on other predictive models. We've done some on the thrust bearing and the turbine guide bearings. We want to look at the excitation system. And hopefully, as we gain more data, we can look at the turbine runners themselves. The next piece we're working on is anomaly detection. And as I say, in a simple way, this is telling when things aren't normal. We have alarms. We have alarms on all the signals that we monitor. When something gets too hot, too cold, the wrong level, we notify the operator they need to do something. Theory of alarms is you have the alarm occur, giving your operators just enough time to respond to it, whether it's shut the unit down, open a valve, make some kind of adjustment. Well, what if we start looking at things long before they alarm? Be able to advise that something has changed. Something's different out there as we look at the data. It's not to an alarm. It's not a crisis. But maybe we can create a notification for the engineer that says something's different in that stator cooling temperature circuit. Maybe a cooler is operating hotter than it used to. It's not a problem yet, but maybe it's something we'll go look at. The reason for this is, again, better equipment management. Can we respond to things faster? If we see something's starting to change and we have more time, we can respond to it quicker and hopefully avoid forced outages. So this is an example of one when we first created it, and the display is fairly crude, but basically it shows in this period last spring, the vibration on C11 behaved differently than it had before. Now this is well under the alarm levels. The operator didn't get a notification. But when we ran the tool, it clearly shows that in that period at the end of April, early May, something changed. The vibration went up, and then it came back down. No alarms were done. Nothing occurred. I asked one of the plant engineers about it, and his first response was, no, I was not aware of that. Why? Because he doesn't look at vibration all the time. He's looking at the operations. He has a lot of things going on. He's not studying all 300 signals on 11 units. But in the end, he looked into it, and he looked into the log, and he says, I think I can explain it. We retorqued the head cover studs. That appears to have lowered the turbine vibration, which caused the generator vibration to go up. And then, in the beginning of May, we made an adjustment on how we heat the powerhouse. So we heat the powerhouse based on the waste air off the generators. They made an adjustment in that system. So, was something wrong? No, but the tool alerted us to go look at something. So it indicates that by having the tool, we see something could occur, we can give it to the engineer, they can check into it and go, that's normal, or maybe there is something we need to look at. So this would be using another tool we have. So once we got that alert, well, how do we understand it? Well, Paul went to the operator log, and I used a tool called Seek, and he and I looked at the other data. And it showed that, yes, as the stator winding temperature went up in the bottom trace there, the vibration went down. So we have these tools now that we can look at our data, and as we increase the ability and the deployment of these across the teams, then hopefully we can make better use of the data that we collect. So what's next? Well, we're working on the next generation of the tool. As you know, nothing's all that simple. So if I'm looking at vibration, the Seek chart showed, well, there's an effective stator temperature of vibration in the other bearing. So how do we combine various signals together? How can we integrate our engineering knowledge that says as the cooling water temperature goes up and the load goes up, the stator temperature should go up? So how do we create combinational anomaly detection that says when the load's at this area and the water's at this elevation and the ambient temperature is here, what should it normal be? And then we can move the normal definition into our operating system. Once we define normal for key conditions, we can then use tools in PI and some of our other systems to create alerts for the engineers. So when something like that vibration, which hasn't hit an alarm, is unusual, we can send an email to the engineers. They can go investigate and make sure nothing's going wrong or see that there is a trend. Maybe we need to do some maintenance before it becomes a forced outage. Rotor-mounted data system. So one of the problems with monitoring data is a huge chunk of our assets, the whole rotor, shaft, turbine system is spinning. Put wires on something spinning and quickly you have a mess. So we've done some work with various senior electrical engineering teams at WSU and Seattle University to pilot the idea of being able to put a sensing platform on the rotor that can collect data from sensors we can put on the rotor, perhaps in the turbine, and then using radio frequency, get that data out to a stationary terminal where now we can monitor it, look at it, create alarms, create analysis, anomaly tools, all those things. We're working to develop a commercial application for this, working with the Hydropower Research Institute and the Bureau of Reclamation to make this a reality. We will put a prototype on one of the units, hopefully at Rocky Reach, sometime late next year, or the first stages of this one. The next one is a hub water sensor. So as you know, we have concerns and issues with our trunnion seals on the Kaplan units. The hub itself is normally full of oil. We want to keep the oil out of the river. There's a seal at the trunnion that's to prevent that. Because the static pressure inside the hub is lower than the static pressure in the water passage, generally the first thing that happens is we start to get water leakage into a runner. In order to find out if we have water leaking in, we have to shut the unit down, take a clearance, install head gates, put in staging, drain it down, access it. It's a 2 or 3 day effort with some safety risk in order just to check by opening a valve at the bottom of the runner, have we gained water and how much? So the idea here is, can we put a water detection sensor in, which is fairly well-known technology, put that down into the hub itself and somehow get a signal out of there back to us to say, hey, you now have measurable water in your hub, a certain level. We're working with Vibrosystem, who is one of our instrument suppliers, and they've come up with technology to do this. And we're having a coordination meeting this week, but hopefully next spring at some point, they'll provide a prototype to us to try. If this works, we'll be able to simply stop the unit for about 10 minutes, take a measurement and say, this is how much water we have in that hub, get the unit back into service, then the engineers can assess when do we actually need to do maintenance on that unit. So the last piece is obtaining useful data. The data has to be the right data at the right time and at the right resolution. If something is happening and changing very quickly, collecting data every 5 seconds may not be sufficient. Maybe if it's rotating on a machine, we need to collect it more often. But it's unreasonable to collect everything at high resolution. If we store everything 100 times a minute at 300 plus signals on a unit, soon we'll be buried in data. So how do we collect what we need when it's needed? We're working with another company to develop an event recorder function. So what this would be a computer that sits and looks at our data on a unit. And when something occurs that we've pre-configured, say that stator temperature went up, maybe it crossed that anomaly level, instead of storing the temperature every 5 seconds, maybe we store it every second for a snapshot, an hour before, an hour after it was detected. Provide some high resolution data that we can then move to our PI archive where the engineers can look at it. The advantage is we can provide high resolution data when it's needed without unnecessary storage. And storage means, of course, challenges in access and use. The last thing on collecting data is our data sources. Of course, all these systems are computerized, and everyone knows how fast electronics and computers change in our world. So these are coming through our governor and control systems. The current ones were installed in the 1980s and 1990s, and like all good computer systems, they're becoming obsolete. They have obsolete hardware and software. And you know we're having an upgrade program where we're going through all the units. We're trying to put the newest generation of the hardware and the software so we can collect data, monitor our equipment, and do it more efficiently at lower cost. Like all things, we can collect a whole lot more data at lower cost on these PLCs and control systems we change it. So hopefully by doing this, we'll get more data, more useful data. We'll have more analytic tools, both at the unit control level and in our data systems, and a better ability to control the units themselves. So basically, as I say, I'm living the dream. I really appreciate and thank you for giving me and those in my group and in the district the opportunity to pursue these things. That's unusual in the industry. When I talk to other people, they all think it's great, great ideas, and we get the chance to do it. So I do thank you for that. We're continuing these efforts. We've included funds in the 2021 budget. And I'll be honest, we're always looking for more things. What's the next step? What's the next challenge we can look to try and solve in this area? So we can leverage technology to do things better and help ensure that we're doing the best for the most for the longest. And with that, I'll field questions.
Commissioners, I would just like to add that with our asset base, we should be leaders in the hydropower industry. I don't think there's any question about that, and we are lucky to have John because he gives us that opportunity, candidly, the big brain, to be able to figure out these kinds of things and allow us to do the kind of work that he's described here.
John, this is Ann Congdon. Great presentation. I love all this technical stuff. Shouldn't call it stuff. But anyway, thanks so much. And this is real innovation. And we committed to that in our strategic plan. And so this is pretty exciting. And I'm happy for you that this is, this is how it should work. This is something that was important to you, something you wanted to do. And I'm happy you've been able to. Thanks.
Well, thank you. I just want to note, it's not just me. I'm the one speaking. There are a lot of people working very hard on this at the district.
I just think this is exciting that we can be on the cutting edge and maybe really improving the longevity of all of our assets. And John, I just want to say, when you come to the commission and speak, you have an incredible ability to translate engineer speak to common person speak. And I love it because I can understand what you're saying and it makes sense. So thank you so much for that translation ability.
Well, thank you, sir.
Yeah, John, this is Dennis. I just am so respectful of your background and your development. And I cannot think of many things more gratifying professionally than to be at this point in your career and have the opportunity to take your experience and work with it creatively. And the payoffs, personally, I think would probably be pretty good, and they certainly are for the PUD and the industry. So thanks for what you're doing, and I just hope you're having a really good time doing it.
Well, thank you, sir. I am, and it is very gratifying to see problems over many years and have the opportunity to try and find solutions to them.
John, this is Commissioner Arsenault. I got to tell you, I've been accused of being a bit of a technology geek and a bit of a nerd, but you're talking way over my head, but I'm getting really excited about the potential for what you're describing and having the vision be able to take a problem and then create a solution is a real gift. And John, we are really, really lucky to have you. And I'm glad to hear that you're enjoying what you are doing because we want to keep you around for a very long time. So thank you for what you do.
Well, thank you, sir. And anytime you want to get together and geek out to dig it, let me know.
All right, John, thank you very much for that wonderful presentation. We appreciate it. I think, commissioners, we are ready to move back to agenda item 5. I think we've got Andrew online. And Andrew will be going through the presentation. Rebecca can move through. I don't think Andrew can see the presentation, but she can keep the board informed as we move through the pages here. So turn it over to you, Andrew.
All right, great. Can you guys hear me now?
Hear you good, Andrew.
All right, great. I apologize about having some microphone issues on my laptop, so we'll get that fixed up for next time. But I can see the WebEx program, so I can follow along with Rebecca there. So good morning, commissioners. My name's Andrew Grissell. I manage our Customer Energy Solutions team, here to provide you with an annual energy efficiency update. Slide 2, I'll provide an update on our 2020 energy efficiency acquisition, as well as a glimpse into what we're seeing for 2021. And this presentation also satisfies the reporting requirements of our energy conservation incentive policy. slide, please. We had a good 2020 regarding EE acquisition, our energy efficiency acquisition. We are on track to exceed 2.12 average megawatts. As you can see on the chart, our target internal stretch target for this year was 2 average megawatts. Our 2020 compliance goal was 1.4 average megawatts, and then our two-year target is 2.8 average megawatts. And so we're in really good shape regarding our compliance, the compliance targets, as well as we exceeded our stretch goal this year. This success during COVID-19 can be attributed to all of 2019 to fill our pipeline of commercial and industrial projects. But as I'll discuss later, COVID-19 is providing the team with challenges in lining up projects this fall for 2021. Move to slide number 4, please. This slide summarizes the savings, cost, and value of our 2020 energy efficiency acquisitions. These are good results across the board. We were able to exceed targets while being under our budget. I would also like to point out a benefit that is not captured on this slide. Most of the cost is associated with payment of incentives to customers. These funds support the economic activity of local small businesses during these challenging COVID-19 times. And these dollars have been going into our local economy when it's needed the most. So not only are we receiving that value of that energy over the life that you see over on the right-hand side, we're doing it with a really good levelized cost. And then we're doing it while also putting and helping to support our local economy. Slide 5. This graph summarizes our savings by sector. And as expected and has been seen in the past, most of the savings come from our commercial industrial sectors. Primarily, this has been through our strategic energy management program, in addition to a few custom projects like the CO2 scrubbers in the ag industry. NEA savings comes from our membership in NEA and is our share of the regional savings amount. And then our residential savings are in line with historic results as well. So overall, everything looks about the way we would expect it to look with regards to how the savings break out among our sectors. We go to slide 6, or slide 5, yes, slide 6, please. And this slide shows us the percent of budget spent by sector. Our cost and energy savings line up pretty well, with the industrial sector having a lower percentage of cost when compared to savings, and commercial residential having a higher percentage of cost when compared to savings. This is not surprising, since our industrial projects are generally the lowest cost in terms of dollars paid per kWh. This also shows that NEA is a good investment, as it has a lower percentage of cost when compared to the savings that are attributed to it. Overall, our costs are fairly in line with what we would expect them to be and how they're separated by sector. Go to slide 7. Finally, this leads us to our parting thoughts. Overall, our programs in 2020 were not impacted by COVID-19. This is primarily due to the groundwork completed in the fall of 2019 to fill the commercial industrial pipeline. In 2021, we don't foresee any problem in meeting our two-year compliance target. However, the pipeline of 2021 CNI projects is not as full as we would like. This is primarily due to the challenges our partners are having with COVID-19. It's been more difficult to get in, difficult in getting their attention for projects, and there are the logistical challenges of trying to get into the facilities to identify projects with our staff and engineering firm we work with. We are trying to identify other means like virtual walkthroughs, et cetera, but these are still being worked on. So at this time, we see a challenge in meeting our 2021 stretch goals that was set in June of this year. As you can see on the chart, our 2021 goal would be another 2 average megawatts, so that we would, over the 2020 to 2021 period, we would have targeted over 4 average megawatts for savings. So for 2021, we will continue to implement our suite of current programs. We will also be focusing efforts on our low-income energy efficiency program, and I'm currently working on putting together a schedule for regular updates as the program and ideas progress. I know this is of interest to the board, and we'll be providing the board with updates. And before I open up for questions, I would like to extend a thank you to the board for your support of these programs and our customers. We continue to receive high customer satisfaction reviews. These programs benefit our customers, the local economy, and Chelan PUD. with that, we can go to slide 8, and if you have any questions.
Commissioner, I'd just like to offer that you may recall that the second and third quarter reviews, performance plan reviews, that Andrew had indicated that we were at risk on this target. He had some hopes that particularly some of the large industrial customers might come through, but couldn't be sure. You can see that actually they've had a really terrific end of the year in terms of the ability to deliver on energy efficiency. So I just want to say congratulations to them. Okay, if there are no questions from the board, Andrew, thank you very much for that presentation and for finding
Andrew,
way.
Actually, before you go, I do have one question, and that has to do with the, you know, with COVID, and certainly with the Pfizer vaccine requires some extremely cold temperatures for storage. My assumption is that that would also be energy intensive. Have we had any discussions with the hospital clinic or even the health district with respect to any special needs for that?
We have not had specific conversations with them as of yet. I believe that a lot of the hospitals might be set up already for this. Well, I was reading recently that the challenging parts with it will be in other distribution areas like the pharmacies, like when it comes becomes a widespread vaccine that's available, like pharmacies as well as maybe like the grocery stores, that kind of thing. And we haven't had any conversations with any of those folks yet. It is a good point though, and we do have some good contacts at Confluence Health that we'll follow up with to see if they're going to have any additional needs on that. Confluence Health has been a great partner with our energy efficiency project. They're very forward on this. But again, they're also busy with a lot of other press issues as we've seen. And so we'll contact them and let them sort of help us as we, and then help them as they need it throughout this time period on that.
Thank you.
But yeah, you're right. I think they take a lot of.
Yeah, I think what I understand is the hospital already has its freezer installed and has been for a period of time, can handle 20,000 units. And that we're projected at least initially to get about 950 units per delivery. So I think the capability is there, but I really think it's worth checking into, Andrew, and I appreciate the willingness to do so.
Absolutely, yep.
Thank you, Andrew.
Okay, we're going to move to agenda item 7, which is the public power benefit program update. Felicity Saberhagen will be making this presentation.
Good morning. I just wanted to do a quick sound check to make sure.
We've got somebody that's put us on hold. And Rebecca says she can fix it. Oh,
okay.
Already fixed. Great. Okay.
Okay. Do I sound okay now?
Yes, you come through very clear. Thanks, Felicity.
Okay, great. So Felicity Saberhagen here with District Services today. I am here to provide an update on the Public Power Benefit Program. Specifically, I'd like to share the outreach plan to engage our customer owners. Included in the outreach is a video that highlights the breadth of the work that we do at the district for our community. The video is produced by North 40 and is an invitation for the public to help generate ideas for projects that this program can fund. Lastly, we do have project requests that we are asking for board direction to fund through the Public Power Benefit Program. And Rebecca, if you want to slide through the next slide, that'd be great. Thank you. And we can go on to the next one as well. Our plan includes targeted outreach to public and nonprofit agencies, as well as our customer owners. agencies are the most likely to have projects close to shovel ready and often can provide a partnership and resources to further leverage the benefits from this program. But as you know, we are in unprecedented times, so our outreach cannot be in person. We will be doing electronic outreach and share the information via our website and video. Our outreach will be adaptive and, if possible, may include virtually attending city and community council meetings on agency requests during the first half of the year. Our outreach also includes a soft launch for collecting ideas year-round rather than a one-time targeted effort. We are starting now because there still are funds available to be allocated out of the 2021 funding cycle. Rebecca, do you want to go to the next slide? Of the $6 million that we had available for 2021, there is still $800,000 remaining. Rebecca, can you go to the next slide now? And this is where we will do the fun part, which is the video. So, Rebecca, I will ask you to go ahead and click on the link there, and it will launch. We can launch the video in there.
Hi, Chelan County. Your local PUD here. We have an invitation for you. But first, we need to explain a couple things. Besides providing affordable, reliable, and renewable energy, your PUD owns and has funded over 700 acres of parks up and down the Columbia River and on Lake Chelan. We've rolled out a fiber network to most areas of the county and growing. The PUD has invested heavily in protecting endangered fish in our waterways. And the list goes on and on. These programs and services can all be supplemented by the Public Power Benefit Program, another way that your PUD invests in the communities of Chelan County with revenue from selling excess power on the open market. You might be asking yourself, where does the PUD get ideas for the Public Power Benefit Program? That's where our invitation comes in. As a public utility, we're asking you, our customer owners, how the PUD should invest back into our community. Now, before you go nuts, we have to tell you about the sandbox we can play in. Remember, the PUD can't fund everything because it is an agency subject to state and federal regulations. We don't want to bore you with all the fine print, but the PUD can generally fund programs connected to our services and mission. Things like enhancements to existing PUD parks and recreation, fiber and telecom services, environmental protection and habitat restoration, electric vehicle charging stations and the use of clean energy, education and job readiness related to our mission, and improvements to district facilities. So if you have an idea for the program, then you can ask if this new idea supports one or more of these community priorities. Does it improve and enhance environmental stewardship or meet an unmet recreation need? Does it support diversity and inclusiveness for underserved populations? And finally, does it complement the efforts of other entities or organizations? PUD staff will determine whether we have the resources necessary to make the new concept a reality. Selected ideas will be taken to our elected Board of Commissioners for consideration and possible approval. So put on your thinking caps and help the PUD decide where to invest in our community next.
Thank you, Rebecca. If you want to move on to the next slide, that would be great. So also, just to let you know, the website does include the same information that was on the video, as well as a link to an application form. By having this available year-round, we really do believe that this will help with board and staff being able to direct customer owners to request for requests for the program onto this site. As I mentioned earlier, we do have a new project request. It is from the City of Wenatchee to evaluate options and develop plans for the Riverfront Park for the area located between 5th Street and Pidus Market. The land in this section of our park is owned by the City of Wenatchee. And the city does have capital funding available from their local revitalization fund that they can direct toward enhancing this area. They are asking us to contribute $200,000 to the planning and design which will begin in the first quarter of next year. The park is part of our Rock Island license, and we will need to take this into account for early action of our relicensing effort when the conceptual planning and design work is completed. If the board is in support of funding this planning effort, we will come forward with an interlocal agreement for the board review and approval early next year. Rebecca, can you move on to the next one? Our next steps, after today, we will officially launch the outreach and solicitation effort. The video and website will be available for the public. If there is board support for the new project request, we will be presenting an interlocal agreement with the City of Wenatchee in January. And again, as we collect projects throughout the year, we will return to the board mid-year 2021 to review project submittals for allocation of either the 2021 funds or the 2022 funds that will become available at the end of 2021. With that, I would like to open it up for any questions.
Felicity, Randy Smith here.
Good afternoon, or good morning, I should say.
I love the presentation that you put together and the video. And, you know, I know we've had individual conversations about the City of Wenatchee's idea, which I think, you know, is something we need to favorably look at. What's going through my head, and I don't have a clear answer to this, is our timing appropriate in light of COVID? And when I say our timing, the timing of the launch of the outreach, are we, you know, I know we want to do this, we want to do it right. You know, at the moment we're, you know, portions of our society are sort of frozen in time. And what is there a possibility that we should potentially push back by 2 or 3 or 4 months this effort, waiting to get some vaccine under our belt? I'm just tossing out the question.
Listen, maybe I'll jump in and take that on for just a moment and say I think this is probably best a board discussion. Here are the issues in play. First, as part of the strategic plan, we identified that we would do a new solicitation. It would be roughly in this time frame. But, of course, the strategic plan was adopted before we knew anything about COVID. So I think it, just because we said that in the strategic plan doesn't mean that we can't revisit given how the circumstances have changed. The trade-off is a modest one, really. It's moving ahead that would give us early warning with respect to 2022 spending. Now, we really were not anticipating giving the process for the solicitation process. It would have much of an impact on 2021. It could have had some, but mostly we were thinking it would be 2022 and beyond. Obviously, the earlier that we have warning, the more we can include it in budgets and planning and those kinds of things, makes it more likely we'd be successful at it. But the trade-off really is that it is more difficult for people to participate in our processes right now with COVID. And with the vaccine on the horizon, that a few months delay may allow more people to participate and may lead to more robust conclusions. So I would just lay that out and say, I think, Commissioner Smith, you've raised a really good question, a fair question, and we'd be interested in board feedback on that. Commissioner Conley, it looks like you might be wanting to say something, but you are still on mute.
You're still on mute, Ann.
Are we able to unmute her?
you go.
There we go.
Oh, okay. Perfect.
Thanks.
All right.
Thanks for your patience. So Felicity, great. I'm always interested, really interested in this topic. So the request is to allocate $200,000 of PPP funding. So just to be clear, and I support that personally as one commissioner, but to be clear, is that something you need a nod of the head? Is that going to, did I miss it? Is that going to come back as an action item later? So what is it that you need today?
Just looking for board direction and support to move forward with developing the agreement will be presented to the board early next year.
So it would be a head nod today, Commissioner Congdon, just that we're on the right track, and so we wouldn't be wasting time if there was board concern about this. But the formal, okay. There will be a formal action in the first or second meeting in the new year.
Yeah, okay. Well, you have my head nod. I'd hate to see us miss out on this opportunity to, you know, partner with the city of Wenatchee. So anyway, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, and let me apologize to the group. I was interrupted by a call from the clinic. Randy, could you do a quick summary of what you said?
I'm very supportive of the plan, the way it looks and everything about it, and the Wenatchee, partnership with Wenatchee. The question I posed, and Steve, I think rightfully, he said, this is an area we need to discuss. Would it be advisable to maybe step back two or three months from the broader based outreach, soliciting input for ideas until we at least get a certain level of vaccination going and people feel that pressure is taken off their lives?
Okay, thank you. I appreciate the thought. Thanks for repeating it.
You bet.
Randy, I agree with your thoughts. The only question I would have is there a timeline with respect to the City of Wenatchee's request?
I think those could be separate. I think City of Wenatchee is a separate deal. You know, so I don't want to hesitate on that.
Okay.
But we've got, I mean, the much bigger picture, the video reaches out to the broad audience. It's time to solicit ideas from the broader community on top of the Wenatchee program project. So I see them very separate.
Yeah, we would agree with that. The City of Wenatchee one is pretty far advanced, actually, and it is just based on this availability of funds from the city. So we can segregate that from the decision about the solicitation process.
Good. Then I'm in favor of Randy's suggestion.
I see Commissioner Bowles concurring. Commissioner Congdon, are you comfortable with that as well? Just taking some more time on the public power benefit solicitation to allow vaccination to occur and to create greater opportunity for involvement?
Well, not necessarily, but, I won't push back in any way. I just think there are a lot of, we could wait forever. There are lots of different things we may find that we feel like we should wait on. So, but, yeah. I just don't want to miss out on the opportunity to partner. I hear you, Randy, that's a separate issue, this particular project. So good, that's good. I don't want to miss out on that opportunity.
Okay, well, I think we have enough direction, at least from the board, to put a short pause, in fact. And we'll be watching how the vaccination rolls out. It's certainly a big issue for us anyway. So we'll be watching how that rolls out. And come back to the board probably late winter, early spring sometime, and some thought about the timing for this. Felicity, are there any issues that you want to make us aware of with respect to that?
No, other than we do get requests about the program on occasion. So if I can leave the information available on the website, but we would just not actively be pursuing that, just so there is a reference if someone does ask, because that might be an acceptable offer to solicitation.
I see Commissioner Smith nodding his head yes.
Yeah.
Good on that.
I agree.
Okay.
Great. Thank you.
I think we're good. So we will be back with the City of Wenatchee proposal in about a month, and hopefully can get that advanced too. Thank you all for that. We actually have finished this morning's agenda. I have checked. We have staff available for the two resolutions that are planned for this afternoon. I would note that in particular, normally the budget is a fairly big deal, but we've gone through our normal process. We've had quite a few meetings, public meetings, about the budget, and we have no public comment on it. So I think it would I'm getting a notice here.
She's just noting that we forgot the red flag. That's okay, though.
You know, I have to admit the annual identity theft prevention item is usually a really small item. It was so small that I overlooked it. So my apologies to Eric. And so let's get that.
I expect everyone's been waiting with bated breath.
I have been, Eric.
Thank you. I appreciate that. No, commissioners, I appreciate the time, and it will be incredibly brief today. I want to first start and say thanks to the group that spends the time working on this, and Carrie Wendell in particular, who always provides me information in advance of this update. So the good news and the punchline is that we had no identity theft to report for 2020 as of today. Carrie did ask that I give you a quick note about some focus areas that her team is paying particular attention to as they do their work remotely under the COVID-driven circumstances. And that is, frankly, to assure the board that they have placed increased focus on limiting personal information on accounts, protecting that information that is there in order to ensure that there is not information that shouldn't be retained that might be subject in the event we were to have a red flag. She indicates that we have seen an increase of collection of deposits based upon the need for softer credit checks under the COVID circumstances, but those are modest. We have seen a decrease in cash payments and also a decrease in credit card payments that are being taken by the customer relations group because of their remote working. We are seeing a greater increase in things, some of the other tools like the online payments and phone automated payment systems. As a result of COVID. And they have been working with the IT staff to ensure that they have all of the necessary secure access through Citrix in order to process customer information, payment, and other requests. So they are continuing to place emphasis and will continue to do so on those areas until we are in a more return to normal status. But again, the primary purpose of this report is to satisfy the annual requirement that the board be advised of identity theft incidents during the year. And the important takeaway here is that there is no identity theft incidents to report for the district in 2020 through today. Happy to answer any questions if I can. Or we can go back to Steve with the resolutions for this afternoon.
Eric, actually, I have one question.
Sir.
And this has to do with auto pay. Are we seeing an uptick in applicants who want to use auto pay? I guess the second part of that question is, are we trying to inform clients or ratepayers that we have this available as an alternative so that they don't struggle to find a way to pay the bill?
So I think the answer to the first part of your question is yes, we are seeing upticks in those alternative payment arrangement processes as opposed to the in-person payment and cash payments. I'm going to channel a little bit prior presentations on the second question, which is I know that Carrie's group is always taking steps to increase customer awareness about the alternative payment opportunities out there, to include the phone pay and the several actually types of credit card online pay. There's a one-time pay, and then there's the revolving auto pay. So I know that the trending has been in prior years upward on those. I can't tell you to what extent or percentage in the past year under COVID, but I know that they are always out there promoting those alternative methodologies.
Thanks, Eric.
Including, by the way, Commissioner, to this customer. So I've shifted over to that as well.
Okay, hopefully Eric will forgive me for forgetting his very important item. And with that, we will move on to the resolutions. First up is item 11, which is approval of the 2021 budget. As I mentioned before, we've had a number of presentations on this through the fall, and we have received no public comment at this point on it. So I will turn it to Mark Mullins and see if he has any comments he'd like to make before we move to the board.
Very good. Thank you, Steve. Can everybody hear me okay?
Yes.
Perfect. Good morning, Commissioners. This is Mark Mullins, Director, Enterprise Planning, Risk, and Analytics. And the resolution before you is requesting approval for the 2021 budget. There are no changes from the second public hearing that was conducted on November 16th, where we presented a bottom line of $51.5 million and an overall combined district expenditures of $539.7 million, which effectively supports our strategic planning goals identified in the 2020 through 2024 strategic plan, as well as the business planning efforts that you heard about earlier this year. The numbers do primarily represent our continued investments in our core assets. Rock Island modernization and facilities are key drivers, and also the planned payoff of some debt, $85 million, from financing activities earlier in 2020, that we ended up delaying the payoff of the debt to conserve some liquidity due to COVID-19 uncertainties. The 2021 budget in the resolution and the related five-year forecast that we presented earlier does meet our resolution requirement to provide the board with an annual budget and a five-year forecast that meets our financial metrics, which this budget does. And as Steve mentioned, we have not received any questions from the public after the October 19th board presentation on the budget overview or the public hearings conducted on November 2nd and November 16th. So with that, I'd like to request approval of the 2021 budget with this resolution and open it up for any questions.
Commissioners, we have resolution number 11 in front of us. Any discussion, any questions for Mark?
Let me start with a motion to accept resolution 11 as presented.
I'll second that.
So moved and seconded. Now we open it up for discussion and questions for Mark.
I would just like to comment on how appreciative I am once again of the way Mark has taken us through this process, and the clarity that he's provided for me as a commissioner in all aspects of the budget. It's been a very good process. So thank you, Mark.
Thank you, Commissioner. I appreciate that. And there are a lot of district personnel that are involved in this process. We certainly have the strategic plan from 2020 through 2024 that the board approved, that really is the cornerstone that that we put forth and work with our business planning efforts to come up with initiatives that support that strategic plan. And a lot of district staff is part of that whole process. So I hats off and thanks to them as well. So I appreciate that comment. Thank you, Commissioner.
Any other questions or discussion for Mark? Well, Mark, I just want to say that I really appreciate all the all the effort, and I know that you're humble, and there are many other people that are behind this, but obviously you're the face by giving the presentation to the board, and you do a very nice job at presenting a very technically complicated subject, and I really appreciate that. Thank you, and please convey to all involved how much that we, certainly I as one commissioner, appreciate the effort behind delivering a budget like this. Thank you.
So, thank Commissioner, you, Commissioner.
You're welcome. So I think what we'll do is resolution separately. So we'll do an approval on this. All those in favor of accepting resolution number 11, say aye.
Aye.
And those opposed, say nay. The ayes have it. It is approved.
Okay, thank you, Commissioners. We'll move to Resolution 19. This is a resolution authorizing extension of Resolution 20-14447, temporarily suspending portions of the district's wholesale telecommunications services rates, and to allow the district and district services providers to enable broadband access to telecommunications services during the period of COVID-19 response. Bob Shane will be making this presentation.
Thank you, Steve. Good morning, Commissioners. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Well, first thing I'm going to note is I don't ever want to follow Mark Mullen in a presentation with that type of upstaging, so hopefully I can come in here just as good as he did. Bob Shane, Managing Director for Fiber and Telecom. For your consideration under this extension resolution, the district will continue to help bring value and benefit to those in need of free internet service in Chelan County. All made possible over recently deployed community hotspots in response to the COVID-19 pandemic and under a partnership with our local service providers. To help put the need into perspective, during the month of November, the total daily usage was estimated to be about 60 connections. That's for the entire 12 hotspots, but varied from day to day and by area. If you'll recall, there are a total of 12 hotspots deployed in Chelan County, two in Malaga, three in Wenatchee, two in Cashmere, one in Leavenworth, one in Eniat, one in Chelan, and two in Manson. What we provide as a district is the reliable and secure high-speed communication pathway between each hotspot and the respective service providers. Technically, that's our virtual local area network, or VLAN. That's the rate that we're referring to. And, of course, the retail service providers maintain the hotspots and provide the actual internet service. Overall, there's been no changes in the number of hotspots or the number of VLANs since the initial deployment. And using this number of 12, we anticipate the need over the full extension, that being of all of 2021. The suspended rates will be $21,456 or $149 per month per site. We'll continue to monitor the usage over the year, and as the demand changes, we will act accordingly. Staff and the participating retail service providers believe this to be an important and valued service to the community, especially during the COVID-19 pandemic. Under this partnership and under this extension, we will continue to serve our customer owners in need of broadband access to support remote schooling, telemedicine needs, telecommuting, and a number of other internet-driven services. With that, I'll open up for any questions or comments.
Commissioners, any questions for Bob?
Just a comment that I think in light of where we are and kids' education, this is really an appropriate resolution.
Okay. Commissioners, all those in favor of approving resolution number 19, please say aye.
We'll need a motion first. Is that right?
Thank you.
I would move approval of resolution 19.
Do I have a second?
The It's like Commissioner Bowles is seconding.
I couldn't get it on mute. I second.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Dennis. All those, so the it has been moved and seconded. Is there any discussion regarding resolution number 19?
Let's need the consent agenda.
Hearing no discussion, all those in favor of approving resolution number 19 as stated, please say aye.
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 No worries.
Those opposed, say nay. The motion passed. Thank you, everyone. That's wonderful.
Commissioner Arsenault, I've made two mistakes today, so this will be my second one. I did not call for approval of the consent agenda, and so we do need to go back and do that.
Okay. So, commissioners, we have in front of us a consent agenda. What are your wishes?
Mr. Chairman, I move we accept the consent agenda as amended.
I'll second that.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. Are there any discussions regarding the consent agenda? Hearing no discussions, all those in favor of approval of the consent agenda, please say aye.
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 And those opposed, please say nay. And the ayes have it. Consent agenda is approved.
Steve, do you get three strikes?
Oh, we prefer to think of it as prioritization, not mistake.
There
is a good company. Your board president's not doing much better.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to say I'm quite nervous now. I'm not sure what happens on the third strike.
Well, your lawyer was quick to defend you, so I think you're safe.
Okay, so next up, we do have some manager items, and I believe we've got folks on the phone to cover this. So we want to start with Justin Erickson, who has an update on the Manson lease agreement.
Good morning, commissioners. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, excellent. Justin Erickson, managing director for District Services. And I, as Steve mentioned, I wanted to update the board on an effort to address a property lease that we've had for about 38 years in the Manson area. And hopefully you'll agree that this solution that's been devised is the best for the community and best for facilitating public use and access. So before I jump into some of the details, let me just make sure everybody understands where we're talking about a small undeveloped area of shoreline just west of Manson Bay Park. And west of the swim area. So sort of along that area where cars park right off of Manson Boulevard, the area is about 7,400 square feet. And by way of background, we came to have a lease for that land back in 1982 in an agreement between the district and the Lake Chelan Reclamation District. The lease was set at $1 a year and was put in place with the anticipation that development of a recreational area may be required as part of a project, as part of our project license. This anticipated need never arose, nor do we believe that such a need is warranted in the future. And so while the site remained undeveloped all these years, over the course of the last year or so, the district was notified by the Reclamation District of some concerns that they had regarding site conditions. And we have also been experiencing some difficulty keeping the public out of the area, which was making the site conditions more problematic. And so thankfully, because we have a great relationship with the Reclamation District and of course a strong partnership with Manson Parks and Recreation, we were optimistic that we could find a mutually acceptable solution that met the needs of the parties and the community. And so what we have now and what the outcome of those discussions has been is the resulting effort has been in the form of a lease termination agreement. And as part of that agreement, there is a clause for property transfer and a release of any claims against the district. So this agreement includes all three parties, the district, the Reclamation District, and Manston Parks. Our lease with Reclamation will be terminated upon execution of the agreement. Reclamation is agreeing to transfer the property to Manston Parks at no cost. And Manston Parks will be able to proceed then with maintenance and site improvements on the subject property. As part of the agreement, the district does agree to make a $300,000 contribution towards maintenance and improvement of the site. And as I mentioned, we will receive a full release of claims as part of the agreement. And although it will take some time for Manston Parks to enhance recreational use at the site, I'm personally excited that one day, hopefully relatively soon, this area will be a positive asset to the community of Manston and the surrounding area. I know some of you are familiar with this area, and as I understand, historically it served as a recreational gathering spot for the community. People would use it as a swim location as well as walk their dogs, etc. And so the area is now closed to the public, but through the good work of Manston Parks, hopefully soon it will be redeveloped and open for public use. Before I turn it over for questions, I just wanted to thank the district team that spent so much time on this. A lot of negotiation and work over the last year that included Michelle Smith, Vicki Griffin, Charles Von Rees, and Ryan Baker. So special thanks to those four individuals. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions the commission has.
Justin, this is Ann Congdon. Just a comment. Great work by all on your team, by you and Michelle and the parks people, Vicki. This has not been easy. This has kind of been, we've kind of moved ahead in fits and starts, or maybe two steps forward, one step back. So I've kind of been following it, and I have received a number of emails from residents. Everything takes longer than we think and than we want it to take, but great work. I'm glad we've come to this point. I know the Manston Parks people are really happy about it. So are the Lakeshore Reclamation folks. So a big applause and bravo to you and all your team. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. I'll convey your comments to the team as well.
So Justin, what 300,000 in enhancements? What are those going to look like?
Yeah, it's a really good question, Commissioner. So I anticipate that Manston Parks will move forward with a redevelopment plan. They will probably seek state recreational funding to help support that. So, you know, on the low end of redevelopment would include things like bank stabilization, erosion control fixes, and then just kind of allowing limited access there. On a grander scale, the site could be developed more completely. I know they've investigated things such as addressing some of the parking challenges, maybe incorporating that area more fully into the boardwalk in the area with Manston, with the adjacent park. So I think part of it will depend on how much of their own resources they want to commit to it and how much in grant funding they're able to receive.
Thank you.
So I'll certainly keep the board updated. You know, we meet frequently with Manston Parks, and as we get wind of their recreational planning efforts and grant applications, be happy to keep the commission informed.
Yeah, Justin, for me, there's two things here that are important. You know, we need to continue to have within our line of sight equity among all of the communities in Chelan County. And I think this is a nice step forward supporting that goal. And then secondly, our commitment to enhance the quality of life in Chelan County, and it certainly meets that goal. So nice work, good proposal.
Thank you.
So Justin, I'm not familiar with this piece of property. Is it continuous to the Manston Park that is up there?
It would It'd be kind of a rock scramble. You'd have to, I would say it's not contiguous, but a ambitious child might disagree.
And so I guess one additional question I might have is, the Reclamation District, you said, was paying $1 a year. Is that the charge to the Manson Parks?
I believe the way it's written, I'll double check. I believe the way it's written is there is no charge. The property is fully transferred over. And so it's Manson Parks will not be leasing the site as we were, but rather full disposition of the property will occur.
So they will own it outright.
Yeah. Yes.
So this is Ann again. Again, a great resolution for all three parties. Have you received any recent emails or messages from, you know, any of the Manson folks or any residents regarding this? I know we were getting some, you know, some people unhappy for a while there that it was closed all summer because of liability to us and to Reclamation.
We certainly did, as you mentioned, receive quite a few comments over the summer. That's quieted down with the seasonality of the use, but and for the last couple of months, it's just taken some time to finalize the agreement and obtain signatures. So we do have in hand signed copies from the other two parties. So I'm the holdup, and so I know that this is really at the finish line, and looks like we'll be able to wrap this up here this week, ideally.
Perfect. Good. Awesome.
But Anne, you just said something that sparked an interest. What is this? Since it was not open for public, is that because maybe the bank was dangerous for people to fall into the lake, or what was it about the property that made it unsafe?
Oh yeah, that property's been sloughing away for years, and they've done some real temporary fixes, and I know the PUD has done some fixes, but there's never been a real wholesale, you know, full-on fix of that problem. And then Justin mentioned that an adventuresome kid would make this contiguous, you know, would hop over the rocks, but there are big rocks and leading down to the lake, and then some concrete. Some old concrete structure that's broken off, and so it's really unsafe and definite liability issues. So we had to close it, and it was tough. I know it was hard, Justin. I know the parks folks struggled because we put a chain across, and then people would either remove it or jump over it, and it was kind of a nightmare, I know, for our folks up in the area. So I'm glad we're getting through it.
Thanks, Dan.
Thank you, commissioners.
Thank you, Justin.
Okay, we have one more item, and I think we can fit this in before the lunch break, and that's a COVID-19 customer impact from John Stoll.
Morning, commissioners. John Stoll, Managing Director of Customer Utilities. Can you hear me all right?
Yes.
Great. Well, this is the similar format you've seen over the months. So slide two really is the self-identification slide. You'll see since October, there's been no further customers identifying with us or putting us on notice that they're impacted. So that's remained the same. Next slide, please. We talked at length a little bit last meeting, but this is the energy assistance program that's administered through Community Action. These are the federal dollars that are really there to support houses that are struggling with their winter heating bills. And you'll see that that activity continues to increase. They served 121 customers and were able to allocate funds. So that just gives you the snapshot of the year to date. And note that almost $186,000 of assistance has been distributed. Next slide. This is the past due status you'll see since October. It's really on the residential has remained the same, right at about $107,000 in past due status. And again, that represents when there's an account balance past 60 days. On the commercial and industrial, we did have a tick up in October, and you see that has dropped down to just about, well, our lowest amount since the pandemic had started.
Hey, John.
Yes.
Can you go back a slide, please?
Sure, Rebecca.
I had a question about the average per customer. It took a moment to sink into my head. But April, May, June, July, and August, is that the average monthly arrears amount, or is that the average electric bill?
That is what they've dispersed to those customers. So,
dispersed to them, okay.
Yeah. So example on that April where it's $462, that most likely represents, you know, we've come out of the heating season, so then there's a balance built up. So that was then used to help, again, cover that those winter heating bills.
Okay. Thank you. I was confused for a moment there, but I appreciate you clarifying that. Thank you.
Oh, no problem. This slide here indicates, you know, where we identify disconnect notices. You'll see the frequency. It's actually less than it was in 2019 when looking at the November status. The box there talks about customers with active payment arrangements, and you'll see that we have for November, there's 9 of them. And you're well aware that, you know, we work with customers all the time to try and help them work down any balance. So that represents that. May recall, too, from the last board meeting, I'd identified through Carrie's group that there were a number of accounts at the residential status that, you know, had built up over the months. There was around 30 of them. Pleased to announce that Carrie and her team's hard work have really worked to reduce those with those customers as well. Next slide. This is the view of the Helping Hands program. You'll notice there has not been too much activity, and really that reflects that a lot of the focus has been on the energy assistance program to provide customers with assistance using that program. It has been minimal, probably anticipate as those EAP funds, as that program slows down, we have Helping Hands available to support in the future as well. And commissioners, that completes it, so I'll stop if there's any other questions.
Commissioners, any questions for John? John, I've got a question. Have we seen any uptick in contributions from other ratepayers contributing to the Helping Hands program?
I think it's been fairly normal, although I'll put a caveat that usually we see a pretty good uptick in December, just through the holiday season, that more contributions come in. So I would anticipate in December we'll see more.
Thank you.
Again, I'd like to just recognize Carrie and the customer relations team. They're continuing to, I think, really manage through this well. And, you know, all things considered, you know, keep our fingers crossed. But I think that, you know, we're fairly steady and not seeing too much of an impact, and continue to work with our customers as we can.
John, just a quick question. This is Ann. You said usually you see an uptick in contributions in December, you know, during the holiday season. Don't most people contribute? I just contribute a certain amount every month on my bill. Is that how most people contribute?
Yeah, you know, it's a mixed bag. A lot of customers do that. You know, sign up and, you know, $5 a month or whatever they feel comfortable with. But it's interesting. I've seen in December, you'll get somebody who'll donate $100. They'll just be in the moment, and they'll do a significant one-time contribution. That's just the way they choose to donate to the program.
Mm-hmm. But the majority of people will just
designate so much each month with their bill, right?
Correct. Yeah, it's a sign up.
Yeah, which is nice, because then we know we have that money coming in.
Yeah, and you know, some customers will do it every month, but they'll just round up their bill. I think we even have an employee deduction for employees who may live in another county and wish to contribute as well. So there's a number of ways people can contribute.
Good.
Okay, Commissioners, seeing no further questions, I just want to call a question here. We probably have just about 5 or 10 minutes worth of material left on the agenda. And then we have an executive session item, and I'd be asking for 90 minutes there. One alternative is just to plow through for the next 5 or 10 minutes and see if we could wrap up this agenda and then just go directly to executive session after lunch. Does that work for board?
Commissioners, that looks acceptable, Steve.
Okay, great.
I see a lot of thumbs up in the videos.
Good. Two action items from the last meeting. One was to provide some more information about how the energy burden customer language works in the Clean Energy Transformation Act. We're working on that. It'll be a bit longer before we have something for you on it. And on the second one, to provide some information about employment, we'll plan to include an update as part of that discussion there. I think that covers our delegated action items. No? Okay.
All right. And I think we skipped over commission items. Commissioners, do we have anything to share? Would anyone care to give a brief synopsis of the state WPUTA annual conference?
Seems like the best person would be our president.
Well, I will make it brief then. Yes.
Back at you, by the way.
Well, thank you for that. I should know better, shouldn't I, Randy? So the state conference was held this last week for WPUTA. It lasted over 3 days, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Many good guest speakers and the exchange of a great deal of very valuable information, and much of it actionable. And Steve, I think you were on a good part of it, if not all of that, at that conference. Certainly Hillary Franz gave us a very informative talk with respect to wildfires and how that directly impacts us, and as well as our involvement in the wildfire initiative. There was also recognition for several outgoing commissioners that either chose to voluntarily retire or that did not win re-election. So we have a host of new commissioners coming in to WPUTA, to the state agency. And of course, that is always an exciting time as the commissioner education is getting wound back up to go into effect to help to educate these commissioners to be effective in the shortest period of time possible. So that's a quick synopsis of commission items.
Gary, I would just add that I thought Liz Green did a really nice job. This be a tough year, wouldn't it? Those of you that, Randy, you've been president, it'd be a tough time to be a president and try to keep everybody engaged. But yeah. Good job. My kudos go to Liz, and George always does a great job.
I agree. And two very key people this year, fighting their way upstream against COVID and all the changes that it brings to trying to have a state agency that continues to meet and maintain effectiveness. So you're right. Absolutely. Strong leadership. So with that, I think we're on to any public comment. So members of the public are encouraged to ask specific questions after each item has been presented and or at this time. So the agenda is now open for public comment. If you do wish to speak, please state your name, your address, and if you'd be kind enough to limit your comments to 3 minutes so that others may have an opportunity to speak as well. So, Rebecca, if we please make sure that the phones are open so that anyone can comment at this time. Hearing no comment, we will move on. And we are actually at the conclusion of both the business and the study session. We will be breaking briefly for lunch. We'll be back at 1 o'clock, but at that time it will be to convene an executive session. And the executive session will be to discuss with legal counsel agency enforcement actions, litigation, potential litigation to which the district or its board is or is likely to become a party, and or legal risks as authorized by the RCW. So, commissioners, if it is acceptable to you, it might cut our lunch hour into 55 minutes, but if we can meet back here at 1 o'clock and go into executive session, does that work for everyone?
Yes.
Great. Okay, then we are adjourned. Thank you. We are coming out of executive session. It is December 7th. 2020. No decisions were made. No votes were taken. Is there any additional business to come before the commission? Hearing none, we shall stand adjourned on this Pearl Harbor Day.